Good morning, everyone. I love how everybody's responsive. Everybody's responsive this morning, too. It was encouraging. Thank you. My name's Eric. I'm one of the elders here at PBC. And this, I can't remember what week we're on, but we're doing a segment on the Psalms. What was great about the prompt for this was pick something that means a lot to you and then teach a psalm out of that. So I've been enjoying, and I hope you have too, if you've heard some of the other ones, of getting a more personal taste, some extra story, some extra context. Sometimes maybe we can be a little heady at PBC and kind of miss some of that, so I'm glad we're doing it this way. So a little context for the psalm I chose. I'm terrible at memorizing scripture. I'm always impressed by someone who'll say, oh yeah, and that's so-so-so, and that's, you know, 2 Corinthians 7:12. And I'm like, how do you remember all of those things? I'm really bad at that. I'm also terrible at memorizing scripture. So, and that's why this story is a little odd, and I've been pleasantly surprised by it. So about 5 years ago, my wife Janice and I were talking about this, trying to figure out what the timeline is, and I'm not exactly sure, but 5 years paints a rough picture. I have this strange habit of reading the Bible, or I guess an unusual habit, where I just read or listen or somebody tells me some story, and then somehow God speaks in something or something captures my imagination, like, oh, what's he talking about there? Oh, there's something interesting there. And I'm not in a rush, and if you know me, I'm rarely in a rush. And so what I do is I'm like, oh, I'm just going to read that one until I don't find anything interesting in it anymore. So I've been doing Psalm 24 for 5 years now, and it's still fantastic. Those of you in YAF may have heard me teach or talk on this a while back, so apologies if there's a little bit of a repeat. So the reason I'm excited about this one is, I don't think this is unique to me, but you know, at about 2 a.m, I'm sleeping in my bed in the middle of the night, and I will wake up, and there'll be something. It's as if my brain has been thinking about something for the last hour and trying to get me to wake up so that I can be more involved in the thinking about it, you know. And it's usually either some problem at work, right? Some other coworker or team who's not. The relationship is not working well. It's my wife Janice. It's my daughter. It's some neighbor I have. It's some other somebody at PBC. You know, whatever it is, there's something that's just eating at me, and I don't like the situation, and I'm stewing on it, and then I can't get back to sleep, and so my sleep suffers. And as I've talked about this, people go, "Oh yeah, that happens to me now and then." So I tend to do that. And about 5 years ago, I decided, okay, I encountered Psalm 24. Let's work a little on this memorizing problem. So I decided I would try to memorize Psalm 24. And the way I would kind of memorize is I just recite it when I woke up in the middle of the night. And initially, this was a struggle because my brain really wanted to stew in whatever the issue was I was stuck on. So I had to kind of push through that and give it some time. And I will say that now, when I wake up in the middle of the night and there's something, I don't do this as often as I used to, and I think because my brain or my heart has realized it's a losing battle, I will wake up and immediately I just start reciting Psalm 24. And it's like, wait, I wanted to stew on this a while. I'm like, sorry, this is where we go when you wake me up. I'm hoping in our discussion here, you'll see what, and I'll touch on that, how that works and what that happens. And I'm going to make a bold claim that Psalm 24, if you have trouble remembering like the big picture of the Bible or all the things going on, or it's kind of confusing, you can read Psalm 24, and it's basically the entire Bible in 10 verses. At least I'm going to try, and we'll see if we can get there. But it's been working for me, so you have to tell me if you agree or not afterwards. So 10 verses. The first two verses we'll talk about are connected to the creation story, and we'll read those now. Yes. The earth is the Lord's and all it contains, the world and those who dwell in it. And the way we're going to do this morning is only 10 verses. We're just going to kind of march through them. I'm going to make a few observations and comments as we go. On this one, the first thing I want to point out is that it's about the earth and the world and everything, and that word all. It's not about like the special people or like the special place, or it's meant to be very, very inclusive, right? It's hard to not say, I don't fit in that, because that's everything that we know, and we'll talk about space in a minute, but so it's everything, right? It's the earth, it's the world, it's all it contains, right? It's everybody in it. And then the interesting twist, linguistically, the word world is used more for the inhabited world or the place where people are. And so and that's also connected with the people who live in the world. So it's not only that God creates and owns the entire world, right? The physical things like the piano and the stage and the air we breathe and everything we need to live. But he also creates it as a place so that we can live, so that we can live there, and it can be a place of a home for us. So in the middle of the night, I wake up, and there's some person at work I'm picturing somebody right now. This guy is just, usually I get along with almost everybody, but this one guy, I cannot figure out how to connect with him. And so I'll wake up, and as soon as I read, the earth is the Lord's, and my brain kind of fills in the rest of this psalm kind of automatically, but I realize it's not, it shifts me from thinking about, oh, this particular problem or situation I'm in, and notice there's nothing about, there's not an individual in this. It's not like the other Psalms of David where it's, you know, it's I'm pouring out my soul, I've been oppressed, all those kind of things. It's just, no, we're just going to start completely with God. You're in this sort of kind of peripherally or a small point. You're an extra in this at this point. But it shifts my thinking about whatever I'm in the middle of from, oh, let's sort of look at it from God's perspective or God's context for all of this. And I'm in it, but it's from his angle more so than it is from my angle. I think I hit everything. What? Yeah. And this is very creation language as well from early in Genesis. So he has founded it upon the seas and established it upon the rivers. So if you remember in Genesis 1, you know, everything gets created out of the deep, out of the waters. And there's a connection here where water has to do with like chaos and always changing and powerful. And, you know, if you think about it, it's really hard to live in the water. I mean, it's okay to visit it or swim in it or snorkel in it for a little while, but to just like live there, you know, like that's tough, right? Just in water, right? So God creates a place for us to live outside of the waters. He doesn't sort of leave us to drown or be adrift or not able to have some anchor in the waters. So for those of us who prefer visuals, I have a photo, and this is sort of applicable for the year that we're in and the season that we're in currently. Does anybody have a guess at where this is from, where this was taken? That's what it's taken of. Where was it taken from? From the moon. No, it's not from the moon, although that's a very good guess. Apollo. Whoever said Apollo, that was a good job. Right, this is the 50th anniversary of the Apollo 11 landing on the moon. So this photo was actually not taken from Apollo 11. This is from Apollo 17. And almost all the photos before this, there were some famous ones of like the Earth rising from the moon, but most of the photography for the moon missions was about the moon. I mean, there's a few that had the Earth in it, and on this wasn't one of the scripted photos to take, but they decided, you know what, let's take a photo of the Earth. And when this was published, this was a little before my time. I was 2 years old when this photo was taken. So I don't remember it because I was two. Apparently, when this was published, this was kind of an iconic, revelatory photo because suddenly people looked at it and went, oh, wait a minute, that's where I live, right? And we all live there, right? You don't see individual people there, but you go, oh, that, and now we all have seen this photo a lot or photos like this. So we know, oh, that's, I live here. This is my home. This is where I'm able to live. So this is a visual of verses 1 and 2, right? That he created this for us so that we could live in it. He separated, he gave us whatever was necessary so that we could thrive, have some stability, have the ability to grow, and which is fantastic, right? Everything out on the black side, notice how much detail there is on the non-Earth part of this photo. Nothing, right? I mean, you see there's stars and galaxies, and they're fantastic to look at, but this is grabbing or gripping. So there's another visual coming, but that's later. Okay, so that's the creation side. So that's the very, very beginning of the Bible. Now we're going to jump into the next section, which is going to be the entire Old Testament in four verses. And the reason I make this claim is because this is about God. I'm going to simplify the Old Testament to say God trying to reach out to man in this world he's created. So he created this world for us to live in it, and now he's trying to help us to live like the way he built it for. And we, as we'll see, we have some issues with that. So, verse 3. Who may ascend into the hill of the Lord, and who may stand in his holy place? So a couple observations about this. Both they're his place, right? It's his hill, his holy place. And there's this notion of ascending into it, right? You don't descend into the pit of the Lord. You ascend into the hill of the Lord. So it's a notion of I'm going up, and then I'm standing in his holy place. And the idea of standing, it's I can stand, like I can, physically stand, and I can be seen, and I'm okay there, right? I can stand in his holy place, right? I don't have to cower off at the side. I don't have to sort of stay off the radar. It's okay for me to be there. I can stand there and be present in that. And I would often, when I hit this one, at 2 a.m, oftentimes I ask, do I really want to ascend the hill? That sounds like work. That's, if I'm stewing on something, I kind of want to stay stewing in it. I just want to hunker down. It's like being depressed where you don't want to go out and have to do something or change something or make something happen. So I'll look at this and go, wow, do I really want to ascend this hill and stand there? Like, I'd rather just sort of be where I am. But then I realize, as we'll see going on in the rest of the verses, no, it's worth doing this. It's worth wanting this. So let's get there. Verse 4. And this is one I'll stew on for a while in the middle of the night. Stew is not the right word. Meditate on. So we'll talk about each of these four things. He who has clean hands and a pure heart, who has not lifted up his soul to falsehood and has not sworn deceitfully. So these are the criteria for being able to ascend to the hill of the Lord and stand in his place. Clean hands, that's a familiar thing somewhat, right? You have the notion of washing your hands of something, or if you're dirty with something you've done. It has something to do with what you've done. And I can't remember which of the Bourne movies, if you've seen those, right? He's always doing some bad stuff. And there's I think it's the beginning of the second movie, correct me if anybody knows, where like the first 5 minutes of the movie is him washing his hands because they've got so much junk on them. And so the idea is this is physical stuff you've done, right? Who has clean hands, right? So have you done anything that's like bad or messy or something you're kind of ashamed or embarrassed about? Do you have anything on your hands? So that's the first one. Usually I can think about that and go, well, yeah, there's probably a few things. But this is kind of generic, so it's easy to talk myself out of, well, but it's mostly good. My hands maybe have a few blemishes here and there, but they're not too bad, so I don't worry too much about this one. Probably means God's got it in for me on that in a bit. Second one is a pure heart. It has to do with what comes out, right? Like the words we speak, our motivations, our attitudes, what's inside of us, and how that then permeates the rest of what we do. I realize it's pretty easy to realize I don't have a pure heart, and I don't kind of get too... I realize that. I'm willing to acknowledge that. But the next two are really the kickers for me. He who has not lifted up his soul to falsehood. The idea of falsehood here is something that doesn't work. Like, it's false because it doesn't... do what it promises to do, or what you hope it will do, or what you think it will do. And so the idea of not lifting up my soul to falsehood is not spending, the idea of lifting up the soul is spending time, putting my eggs in that basket, spending resources or money on. You know, so it's not, you know, have I done something pointless? That's not really what it's about. You know, like, have I wasted some time? It's not as much that as, you know, have I put my soul into that? You know, what have I put all of me into something that's really fruitless? I think for each of us, you could think about it as if, you know, if somebody looked at your browser history or your credit card statement, or you're like, what are the things that reveal where we put our souls into? Like for me, the issues in the past have been, well, not all of these, but some of these will be illustrative, right, of the concept to hit at home. It's, you know, it's what are you maybe addicted to, right? Like, so pornography, that's something that's a thing easy to lift your, you don't set out to lift your soul up to it, but you sort of dabble a little and you go, oh, this is just a good way to escape. So you, next thing you know, you've lifted your soul up to it. I'm trying to think, is there a connection there, maybe? Right, or drinking, right? You drink a little bit and you go, oh, that helps. It sort of deadens me in some way a little bit, and I like that. And then the next thing you drink more and more, and the next thing you know, you've lifted your soul up to it. So usually you don't lift your soul up to something. You don't set out to pursue something because you want to invest yourself completely in it. It's more all of a sudden you find yourself, ooh, wait a minute, my soul's lifted up to this. The one I'm personally working on a little bit right now, and I think this is the first I've mentioned it to Jess, I'm trying to cut Netflix cold turkey, like no more Netflix for me. Because I'd find I would be, my home office is the same room that has the TV in it, so I've got some problem I'm working on at work and it would get thorny or sticky or something, or I'd have some call that didn't go very well, and like, you know, I can just turn on an episode of whatever, and then there's another episode after that, and pretty soon, wait a minute, I didn't do half the things I was supposed to do at work today, so no more Netflix for me. I'm trying to illustrate something to see, you know, see how it might connect. The worst one for me is this last one, has not sworn deceitfully. This has to do with kind of saying something to have people like me or agree with me or diffuse whatever the conversation I'm in. I'm basically an introvert, and so if I can kind of get out of a conversation by saying something, sometimes I'll take that path to my own demise. And doing something there where it's kind of a let your yes be yes and your no be no, and I'm not always on that. Sometimes I'll say yes as a way to sort of deceive and say, well, you think I'm going to do what I just said yes to, but I actually don't end up doing it. I'm embarrassed to admit. The pastors here a while ago, Lynn Fox, was writing a book and asked me to review a chapter for her. And I said, oh, I'd love to review it. I'd love to read her writing. And then it was in my email inbox. And I looked at it at first and went, oh, that's going to take some time. I'm really going to attend to that. Well, I'll come back to that later. And the next thing you know, like a month had passed, and then a few months had passed, and I finally had to have a conversation with Lynn and say, you know, Lynn, I told you I was going to do this, and I couldn't do it. I didn't do it, and I'm embarrassed to have to say that. So that's the one that hits me in this one. So when I'm reading this psalm, and I'm going through this, yes, okay, here's God. Okay, yes, I want to be part of his thing, but oh, then there's this little inventory part, and I start recognizing these ways where, well, maybe I can't get on that hill or stand in that holy place. Because, then let's go to the next one. Sorry, I forgot I was going to ask you guys this question. Backtrack just for a second. Think about what is your, where are you prone to a falsehood? Where are you vulnerable to a falsehood? Where's some falsehood in your life that's a weakness? Is it working? Is it helping that you've sort of leaning into that or not? And something to pray about, something to ask a good friend or a group about. And the second one is very similar. Where are you prone to deceive? Where are you prone to say something that's true, but also kind of not true in your interactions? So where might that be? So two questions to think about. Okay, then we go to the next one. So this is why you would want to be on ascend the hill and be in his presence, because he shall receive a blessing from the Lord and righteousness from the God of his salvation. The word here for receiving the blessing is actually the same word, but not negative, for the lifting up the soul to falsehood. So the connection here is, if don't lift your soul up to what's false, but be lifted up by the Lord with his blessing. So which one is lifting you? And the two concepts here is that it's the blessing and righteousness. And both of those have a sense of being declared just, being okay, being like your life and who you are is valuable and honorable and glorious. And so you think about that and you go, well, yeah, I'd like to have that. I would love for that to be. The only problem is you've got that interim chunk where you're like, well, maybe I'm not going to be on that hill or get up to that holy place. So this is great to be able to have. And what's interesting is it's not this sort of heaven-hell language. It's not, and there's language elsewhere in the Bible for that. But in this psalm, it's not about, well, if you're not ascending the hill, then you're weeping and gnashing your teeth and in torment. It's just, well, you're not going to get any of this. And so it's sort of a not super positive, as opposed to, you know, good and bad as the outcome. So I find it interesting to think about the motivation being, it should be better. Okay, next verse. So this is the generation of those who seek him, who seek your face, even Jacob, Selah. In backwards order, if you're not familiar with it, Selah is kind of a pause, a sort of an end of this section, kind of a this is so sort of cap. It's like sort of an emoji at the end of a series of sentences. Like, okay, I'm going to comment on what I just said, and then I'm going to start something new. Jacob then is referring to the nation of Israel. So at the time, right, this is the nation of Israel. This is where the Psalms came from. This is a Psalm of David. And so he's talking about the people who look this way about what God is and have this attitude of being in his place and receiving his blessings are us, those who are seeking him and who are seeking his face. So it's not only just seeking him and his ideas and what God wants, but it's this face is the idea of, you know, presence, right? It's the difference between having a face-to-face conversation with somebody and texting them or emailing them or doing something like that, right? I want to see all the nuances. I want to see your reaction to what I'm doing. I want to be in that kind of a relationship. So are you seeking that? Are you seeking God's face in that way? So that you're seeing something about him and you realize he's seeing you and you guys are okay with each other. Like, it's going back and forth, which would be, you know, fantastic. So first, God creates the whole world for us to live in, to grow in, to thrive in. He says, yes, I'd love for you to be a part of this in my holiness, receive all these blessings. You know, just seek this. And then there's, as I read this, well, there's these things I'm not really there. Which is where we come to the New Testament. And I realize this is going to be a little bit of a jump when you read this, these next verses. All of a sudden it shifts to a totally different context, but hopefully it will make sense when we get there. So, verse 7, lift up your heads, O gates, and be lifted up, O ancient doors, that the King of glory may come in. Gates, doors, ancient doors, heads on gates. You know, everything before this was fairly straightforward, and then you get to this, and you're like, what is he talking about, or what is this referring to? So let's jump ahead to verse 8 to finish a little bit about the King of Glory. And it's, who is the King of Glory? So it's going to help at least interpret that. The Lord strong and mighty, the Lord mighty in battle. So go back one to verse 7 again. So what's interesting here is the Lord who, you know, the earth is the Lord's, everything here, all of us, the place we live, that's all his. And somehow he can't get in. There's somewhere he can't go. Like, you think, well, how is that possible? He's mighty in battle. He owns all of this, right? He's created it all. How come he can't? What's going on that he can't get somewhere? There's language in the Old Testament about how God mourns for Israel because he set everything out for them, and they're just not holding up their end of the covenant. They're not following him. They're not doing what he asked them to do. And so it's not that he doesn't want something good for us. It's that we put something in the way of him doing what he's trying to accomplish. So the reason I titled this section the Gospel or the New Testament is to think about us being the gate or the door and not wanting to be open to letting the King, the Lord, and Jesus come and be in with us, right? In this, he's outside and he wants to come in. And there's something that's not open to allow him to do that. And to think about us being the ones closing that off. And again, for the visual, I like this picture because I question whether this door can actually open, right? It looks like it's probably rusted shut. It's almost trying to blend into the wall, like not seem like it's a door. And I mention those kinds of things to think about how we kind of wall ourselves off from relating to God or relating to Jesus in some way because, you know, it's just comfortable to do things our own way. Or, yeah, we've got these other things we do with God, but maybe there's some way we're like, no, I kind of want to pretend there's no door here. You know, nothing to worry about. Let's talk about something else. And to think about, you know, where's a place in my life that I'm closed off to Jesus and his power and might coming in to do something. So that's my New Testament connection. The last two verses are very similar. Again, lift up your heads, O gates, and lift them up, O ancient doors, that the King of glory may come in. And all of this lifting is the same. There's a lot of lifting in this psalm. So the earlier one, I think it was verse 5. No, wait, 1, 2, 3, 4. Don't lift your soul up. You know, receive a blessing that's being lifted up and blessed. More lifting, right? So in this sense, it's a lifting open the doors, right? Being lifted to work or to function or to do something. And the first one is that the Lord is mighty in battle. And the second one, verse 10, who is the King of glory? He is the Lord of hosts. He is the King of glory. Salah, again. This is Psalm 24. Still Psalm 24. Thank you for asking. What I was trying to say is verse 1 and 2 are creation. Verses 3 through 6 are retelling the Old Testament story to a certain degree. And then verses 7 through 10 can be interpreted in a New Testament way. That's the connection. I'm glad you asked that because I wasn't as clear as I wanted to be there. So the two attributes of the king, who is this King of glory, is he's strong and mighty in battle, so he's powerful, and this, he's the Lord of hosts, so he has authority, right? So he can do it both physically and from an understanding of, you know, the rest of the powers that are out there. He is in control and able to do stuff. So I think we're done on the slides. And what I want to sum up or end up by saying, because people have asked me, it's been fun. I've talked to my coworkers about, you know, well, what are you doing this weekend? Oh, well, I'm teaching this thing at our church. And they're like, oh, well, what are you teaching about? Well, I'm teaching about how, like, I wake up in the middle of the night and I'm stressed about something, and I found this psalm that really helps. And my goodness, they love to chat about that. They're like, wait a minute, I wake up in the middle of the night, and tell me more about that. And I say all that to say, I think there's a way that the Bible is powerful and that it will do something. And it has worked for me in this because I've given it a lot of time. And I've been confused, but I just give it time and see what happens out of it. And so I'd encourage you, if you're saying, you know, I'm reading the Bible and it's not working, you know, are you reading it because, well, I'm stuck with this, so I'm going to read it, and, oh, I didn't get my answer right now, and so forget it. You know, God's time is much stretched out from that, so you got to give him some time to work on it. So I'd encourage you in that to find something, that some passage of the Bible, and just stay in it and see what he does with it. You know, give it a lot of time to do something. And then just on this, the whole closed door thing, right? You'll notice that once you open the door and the king can come in, then the way, right, as we understand how Jesus has died for us, he is the king who wants to come in, and he's the one who will lift us up so we can stand in the holy place and receive all this blessing. So you know, maybe like you're a Christian and you go, oh yeah, there's this area of my life. Maybe I should think, you know, be willing to open the door up and let Jesus in there and see what he does, which is risky. It might be painful. You don't get to control it, but that's kind of what being open is about. And maybe you're not a Christian. You're like, not quite sure what half of what you've been talking about is, but Jesus, there's something appealing about being blessed, not having shame, being, you know, finding my purpose in the entire world for what everything was created for. That sounds appealing. And to suggest you consider that Jesus is somebody to either investigate or to open yourself up to and say, Jesus, I think you're the real, there's something going on about you here that I'm seeing that I want to receive or have to be a part of. So I would encourage you to open the door, whatever the door is in your life. That I'm going to pray. Father, thank you for creating all of this for us, for wanting us to thrive, to be alive, to be a part of what you're doing. Lord, I confess for me and folks I talk to, sometimes we're just happier being miserable, and I'm not sure why. And Lord, thank you for offering hope for us, offering a way to save us, to rescue us from that situation. So Lord, help us to be open to you, to let you come in and be powerful and mighty and do something because we've opened to you, Lord. Lord, we need you desperately. We cannot do this on our own. Thank you for offering it to us. In Jesus' name, amen.